This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
It's going to be less difficult to prove under the present administration that views human-made climate change as a Chinese hoax. We believe that we're going to show substantial indifference, especially in light of the testimony of the various appointees in their confirmation hearings.
What do a 13-year-old in Louisiana, a 14-year-old in Oregon, and a 16-year-old in Hawaii all have in common, besides possibly the number of hours a day they spend on Instagram? Actually, these teens are among a group of 21 very serious youth plaintiffs who've leveled a legal challenge to climate change policy. This week on Sea Change Radio, we break down Juliana versus U.S., a landmark case wherein children are suing the U.S. government for allowing dangerous CO2 levels to permeate the atmosphere and disrupt the future environment. Our guest is Philip Gregory, the lead plaintiff attorney on the case, who breaks down the timeline of the proceedings, the potential impact it could have both in the U.S. and overseas, and the role former ExxonMobil CEO and current Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has in the case. Historically, lawsuits have been an effective way to move what appear to be intractable policies and practices. Could this group of young people topple the protective wall the government has built around the gas and oil industry? And if they do, what Instagram filter will they use when they post their victory? I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Philip Gregory. He is an attorney with Cotchett, Petrie, and McCarthy in Burlingame, California. Phil, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much, Alex.
So you're the lead plaintiff in a very interesting case. Instead of me trying to explain it, I think it might be better if you do it for our listeners.
Sure. Well, there were 21 young kids from all across America who are plaintiffs and along with Dr. James Hansen, who's serving as the guardian for future generations, we brought an action up in Eugene, Oregon, under the Constitution and under the public trust doctrine against the United States of America. First, against Barack Obama, and then since the inauguration, our lead defendant is Donald Trump.
But this didn't start with Donald Trump, correct? As you mentioned, so this started in 2015. So this isn't some reaction to the Trump administration.
We first filed this case in August 2015. And a lot of people are not aware of it, but the Obama administration had as many flaws concerning climate as prior administrations. Our emissions did not go down. There are a number of flaws that during the Obama administration continue on, particularly when it came to coal on federal lands. So we went after the Obama administration, but after January 20, when President Obama left office, we focused our sights on the current administration.
And what is the goal of the case? What would be considered a victory?
Sure. So our case, we're focusing on climate science, and we are going to bring before the court the various national and international climate scientists who will establish, A, that we have a serious problem, and B, what the target parts per million should be that our federal government is forced to focus on. And then we're hopeful to get a court order that, like in the civil rights cases, will force the Trump administration to devise a plan and implement that plan to achieve a target which we believe should be 350 parts per million.
And why don't you give us a survey of the plaintiffs themselves, these children or teenagers, and how you're trying to establish standing?
Sure. So we have young plaintiffs from across the country. For example, we have Jaden, who lives in the Baton Rouge area. Just before we had our court hearing last September, Jaden, who's 12 years old, went to sleep in a home where floods are supposed to occur once every 500 years. And she woke up, she got out of bed, stepped into ankle-deep water, and stepped into climate change. So we also got another young plaintiff who lives on an island in Florida, and the beach that that plaintiff used to play on no longer exists because of sea level change. We've got other plaintiffs who have farms in Oregon or places in Hawaii, and they have all been affected by the various problems with nature that climate change that is human-induced has caused.
And why don't you explain how that first victory in Oregon, you were able to establish standing? And,
sure.
And maybe give us kind of a little bit behind the scenes of what the defendant was arguing in the case as well.
Sure. So it under our Constitution, anybody who brings a case in federal court must establish that he, she, or it has standing. And the three elements are: you first have to show you have an injury in fact. Secondly, you have to show that that injury was caused by the defendant. And third, you have to establish that the court can provide a remedy, or what's called redressability. So let's take those one at a time. Injury in fact. Our plaintiffs have showed that they are suffering problems, as I said, with Jaden
in Louisiana.
Then we have other plaintiffs in Florida and Hawaii who are affected by sea level rise. So we've showed that these plaintiffs are injured. The next issue is, how do we show that the federal government caused or was a substantial factor in causing their injuries? Well, we have declarations from climate scientists that the United States government, either directly or through enabling other organizations and countries, the United States is responsible for 25% of the global climate problem. So we've got the United States government as a primary actor in this problem. Finally, in terms of redressability, or what can the court do? We convince the court that, like in the civil rights desegregation cases or in the recent California prison cases, the court can establish a goal or a target and require the governmental body to establish a plan to meet that target. And that's what we believe the court can do here through such things as pursuing alternative energy, ending leasing for purposes of coal on federal lands, various very simple, very straightforward matters that a court traditionally does in other types of cases, we believe the judge can do in this case.
Now, have you addressed past subsidies for fossil fuels industry for the last, I don't know, some odd century, really, some would say?
Yes. And so our case, the constitutional part of our case, requires us to show that the government, in essence, has known for years of the problem created by emissions of CO2 and has acted with substantial indifference towards that problem or has enabled the problem. So to give you a quick analogy, if the government knows that by placing a child in a foster home, that child is potentially subject to danger, either abuse or poor medical care, but the government places the child in the home, then the child has had his or her constitutional rights violated. Well, the same thing is occurring right now and has occurred for decades. Certainly since the 1980s, the federal government has had numerous reports that if we continue on with business as usual, then by 2015, approximately, we will hit a tipping point. The government has had reports from the Office of Technology Assessment for Congress, the EPA, that we need to make drastic changes in the way we enable fossil fuels. Yet the government, under administrations from George H.W. Bush all the way through President Barack Obama, has failed to exercise the political will to take those steps. And as a result, the people who are going to be most harmed are the youngest generation, our kids or our grandkids, as well as future generations.
And is that the reason for having these children as plaintiffs in the case?
Exactly. I mean, a quick analogy is to the civil rights cases that were brought to show that separate but equal didn't work in the 40s and the 50s by having kids say, look, our school is worse off. But we're being treated without the appropriate protections and we're being harmed. There was a great amount of science introduced in those cases about how having a school for whites that had better grounds, better facilities, better buses, psychologically harmed the African American children. And that evidence was very persuasive both in the district courts and to the United States Supreme Court in Brown versus Board of Education.
And this is 1954, and to extend the analogy, climate science wasn't very evolved in 1950, 60 years ago, but 60 years before Brown versus Board of Education was in 1896, you had Plessy versus Ferguson that was saying that
separate but equal is fine.
And the science of those days
exactly
said that they should be just fine and did not take into account what you just explained was introduced in Brown versus Board of Education.
Exactly. And a lot of people lose sight of the psychological testing evidence that was introduced by the NAACP in the cases that led up to Brown. And we're going to put the same type of science before the court. In our case, Juliana versus United States up in Eugene. And we believe that the science will prevail over politics.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Philip Gregory. He is the lead plaintiff's attorney for Juliana versus the United States. So, Phil, you're not just fighting the United States government in this case, are you? You're also taking on the fossil fuel companies. Why don't you expand on that if you can?
Certainly. So after we filed the case in August, one of the first things that happened is that the trade associations for the petrochemical industry, the National Association of Manufacturers, and the American Petroleum Institute moved to come into our case as defendants, or moved to what we call intervene. The judge granted their motion because the trade association for the fossil fuel industry claimed that if the plaintiffs prevail in Juliana, that the fossil fuel industry will be substantially damaged and could become extinct based on what we are seeking in our case. So since that point, the trade associations for these various industries have been defendants in our case and are trying to make sure the court does not issue the drastic remedy that we believe is appropriate given the climate science.
How can that be credible, that one of the most mature, wealthiest industries the world has ever known could be made extinct by your little case? Mainly because it's only in the United States, right? It doesn't apply to these multinationals, which are getting billions and billions of dollars overseas.
But obviously, and first off, I totally agree with you, but obviously we know that a substantial problem is that our federal government is shipping a lot of the material, whether it's oil, gas, coal, away from the United States. So while that coal may not be resulting in fossil fuel emissions in the United States, it's resulting in fossil fuel emissions elsewhere. And these companies are concerned about what effect this case will have on the ability of the federal government to continue to enable this systemic problem of fossil fuel emissions. And so they are banding with the federal government to keep these kids from getting the appropriate remedy. So what you have is a genuine David versus Goliath story, where you've got 21 kids and they're taking on the federal government and the fossil fuel industry. It doesn't get any more different than that.
In the same breath, we're talking about an international crisis and climate change and fossil fuel emissions. Why don't you explain why you're limiting the case to the U.S. federal government and not international law?
Certainly. So our case is under the Constitution and the Public Trust Doctrine. But the organization called Our Children's Trust, Our Children's Trust is a nonprofit based in Eugene, Oregon, is also bringing cases in other countries of the world, the Philippines, Pakistan, the Netherlands. We believe this is an international problem. However, if a court in the United States takes the necessary steps and requires the government to put together a plan and implement that plan to wean our country of fossil fuels, we believe that the foreign nations will follow that lead and will themselves also cut back on the use of fossil fuels.
So you're trying to establish precedent in a domestic court that can be applied to other domestic courts in other countries?
That's correct.
I see. And is there precedent for that happening? Not in climate change, but in other arenas, other realms.
Sure. It's occurred in healthcare. It's occurred to a large extent in our civil rights cases. So there's a number of parallels here, but we genuinely believe that the court system here in the United States is viewed as a leader. And recently, it stepped up on the immigration ban. We believe the same circuit court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, will step up on climate science.
Now, the courts aren't changing drastically with the Trump administration coming into power. But of course, the administration itself and all the levers of power have shifted in ways that we can't even begin to fathom. You've been trying to get
Rex Tillerson, the new Secretary of State, the former CEO of ExxonMobil, on record on this case. Why don't you explain the reason for that and give us an update on how that's going?
Sure. So before Mr. Tillerson was Secretary of State, he was chairman of the board and CEO of ExxonMobil. He also was chairman of the board and on the executive committee of one of the defendants in our case, the American Petroleum Institute. The American Petroleum Institute had an ongoing policy of attempting to influence presidential administrations not to address the global warming crisis. We would like to know why Mr. Tillerson, in his capacity as chair and CEO of ExxonMobil, as well as chairman of the board of American Petroleum Institute, was funding climate deniers, was funding individuals who would keep the federal government from implementing the necessary policies. Finally, we want to know what he's going to do as Secretary of State to address the problems that are going to occur as a result of climate change on our borders as things get worse rather than better.
So you won in federal court in Eugene, Oregon, in March of 2016, is that right?
Yes. So first we won in March 2016 on, it's a preliminary stage of whether or not the court believes we have set forward a legal basis for a case against the federal defendants. The defendants challenged that, and that was reaffirmed on November 10, 2016, 2 days after the election. And so now we're moving forward in the process of discovery where we are going to be putting out our climate experts. And the federal government, as they said in open court the other day, is going to have to scour the world to find experts to contradict our testimony. And then in hopefully the fall of 2017, we're going to have a trial where we're going to be putting on the science, and we'll see what type of contradictory evidence or alternative facts this administration attempts to introduce at trial.
And now, is this the same district that ruled in the preliminary hearing in 2016, this one in the fall will be the same Oregon federal court, correct?
Yes, it'll be the same federal judge, Judge Ann Aiken, who sits in Eugene, Oregon.
And who was she appointed by?
Well, she's been a federal judge for a number of years, but we were also before Magistrate Judge Thomas Coffin, and both of them have said in opinions that we have an exceptional case here, and they're not trying to get caught up in the politics. They're not trying to say one administration's view is right, another's wrong. What they've been very clear about is they want us to bring the science into the courtroom and have the science before the court rather than a number of people who have political agendas.
Your lawyer called and said he had the papers all prepared. To sign my name was all I had to do. He saw the judge, now he's seen me. There's only one thing left. Will your lawyer talk to God for you? Will your lawyer talk to God and plead your case up on high and defend the way you broke my heart in two? On earth, but is God satisfied? Will your lawyer talk to God for you?
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Philip Gregory. If this case had moved forward under a Hillary Clinton administration, how would you have foreseen the fall 2017 case proceeding as opposed to the reality that we have right now with a Trump administration?
Sure, certainly. The standard we have to meet for one of our claims is substantial indifference. Obviously, with had Hillary Clinton been president, she had views on addressing climate change that were, I'll call it 180 degrees different from this current administration. So we might have had a tougher time proving substantial indifference under President Hillary Clinton, but it's going to be less difficult to prove under the present administration that views human-made climate change as a Chinese hoax. We believe that we're going to show substantial indifference, especially in light of the testimony of the various appointees in their confirmation hearings.
So if the Trump administration goes forward with repealing the Clean Power Plan, for example, that would grease the skids for your case, is what you're saying.
It's very interesting that when government lawyers in 2016 were arguing this case, they were saying to the federal judge, well, look, we've got all these regulations in place. We've got the Clean Power Plan. So you, judge, don't need to do anything because the regulations and the Clean Power Plan are steps showing the president is fully prepared to protect the present and future generations. But obviously, under the Trump administration, he's going to get rid of the Clean Power Plan, and he's going to get rid of the same regulations they were arguing are in place to protect future generations. As a result, we think that our case is going to be more significant. In fact, the Washington Post has called our case the trial of the century because we're going to put climate front and center, and we're going to see how the Trump administration responds.
Well, it's fascinating. If listeners want to get involved or follow this case more closely, what can they do? So you mentioned our Children's Trust. People can donate there. What else can they do?
Sure. So first off, this case is igniting the youth of America, both in high schools and in colleges. And through the website of Our Children's Trust, they can not only donate money, but they can volunteer. We're looking for people to help us review government documents, for example. We're looking for people to get the message out about the importance of our case. We're looking for activists who are prepared to show, stand up and state exactly what needs to be said, which is it's up to the courts now to solve the problem of climate change, because neither this president nor the Congress have the will to do it.
Philip Gregory, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It's great being here.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by The Budos Band, G-Love and Special Sauce, and Kitty Wells.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.